the Senate Committee on Transportation. We're meeting in Hearing Room B on Monday, April 27th, 1987 at 8 a.m. We're having a public hearing and possible work session on House Bills 2399 and 2775.
Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. Good morning. Don't leave. Now that we have a quorum.
That's me. Thanks.
Members who aren't here are excused.
Something like that.
We have a couple of bills, and it shouldn't take us long to table them. No,
that's
I'm just kidding. And let's start with a hearing on House Bill 2399. And Greg, do you and Cliff want to come up together? Okay.
I need some earth-shaking bills.
But I don't know. I haven't looked at them.
You want to go ahead and no, just...
Madam Chair, members of the Transportation Committee, for the record, my name is Greg Knox. I'm Legislative Assistant to Representative Paul Phillips, District 9. Representative Phillips has introduced this legislation on behalf of Cliff, Georgia, who's up here with me now. This merely is kind of a housekeeping bill, we think, that will prevent a circumstance that has occurred in the past, and I'll let Cliff speak on the bill.
Thanks, Greg. The reason this came about is approximately a year and a half ago.
Put your name on the
record. I'm sorry, my name is Cliff Georgioff. I operate a truck driver training school. And approximately a year and a half ago, one of our vehicles became defective through use out on the road with students and instructor, and we were cited by Oregon State Police. Which is fine. We don't have a problem with that. If we're wrong, we deserve a citation. The thing that I thought the problem with that was the student was cited. And
when
it
you say we were cited,
No, it was just the student was cited. We were stopped because we had defective equipment, and a citation was issued. It was issued to the student. The problem I had with that is a student comes to us, doesn't know anything about how to drive a truck. He's paying us to learn how to do that. And then through our fault, he receives a citation that goes on his driving record, which may affect his future employment within the industry. I thought that was an inequity in the law that really needed to be addressed. And so I asked Representative Phillips to help me out. And we came up with this bill.
Yeah.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, in previous testimony in the House committee, there was some feelings, and the state police had mentioned that there were laws that could cover this issue. They seemed to be somewhat interpretive, and this would just solidify the way the law would be phrased, so there would be no interpretation problems.
Okay, we do have someone from the state police signed up to talk about that. Cliff, what kind of defective equipment were you using?
I think at the time, that particular citation, I believe it was for lights. We had either the light cord pulled out and the lights on the trailer were inoperative, or it was something along those lines.
How many schools are there, or is that a Motor Vehicles Division question?
I believe there's four in the state.
Four.
I might add that this bill does not relieve us of our responsibilities in any way. If a citation is deserved, it should be issued. We're just trying to get it to the right people and not give it to a student who really doesn't deserve it.
Okay, so what this says is that the police can't cite a driver for any provision of 815, and 815 is the vehicle equipment generally chapter.
That is correct, defective equipment.
And then for 816, 300. 330 or 360. And let's just, what are those?
They should be right along the same lines. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me.
330, Madam Chair, is lighting equipment, and 360 is use of prohibited lighting equipment.
Okay. And 300 is, yeah, operation with non-standard lighting equipment. Without required lighting equipment. And what is 360, Senator Simmons?
360 is the use of prohibited lighting equipment.
Okay. And so the conditions that they would do that under would be if the driver is in a truck driving school that's licensed by the Department of Education, and if the driver is operating a vehicle owned by the school in the instruction course, and if the driver is accompanied by an instructor from the school, and if the instructor shows a police officer a copy of the license issued by the department.
That's correct.
Do you always carry a copy of the license issued by the department when you're instructing students?
We do not, but it's a matter of photocopying. It would be very easy to do.
Right then and there?
No, we would photocopy ahead of time and just put it in along with the vehicle licenses.
Oh. Okay. Does anybody else have questions? I'm just...
Well, I do, Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Simmons.
What kind of citation was issued that gave rise to this?
It was a defective equipment. I believe it had to do with the lights, if I remember correctly.
Well, how seriously? What problem with the lights?
A matter of the... I believe they were pulling a set of doubles, and the rear trailer on the doubles, the light cord between the two trailers had pulled apart, and so the rear trailer didn't have any lights at all.
Did you say that the equipment had malfunctioned and was pulled off to the side of the road?
I believe it was still driving down the road at the time it was pulled over, and the police officer was the one that made the student aware of it.
This is at night?
Yes, sir. Well, there's no question that the ticket was deserved.
Well, I think a truck driving down the highway at night with no taillights is the kind of hazard that there should be no excuse for. And a student driver, wouldn't part of his instruction be to get out and check to be sure that the lights are working?
Yes, sir. They were working when they started off, and they became defective as they were bouncing down the road. The light cord became loose and didn't maintain contact. So it happened through use. It would be something that he would have to constantly check in his mirrors and know what to look for. And it's something that they just weren't used to looking for yet. Remember, they're still in a training status. They're still learning.
What if somebody had come along behind him and run into him because there were no taillights?
That definitely could have happened. That would have been a problem. Like I say, I believe the ticket was deserved, but I don't believe the student who's still learning how to do it deserves a ticket. I think that should be our problem.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Brockman, did you have a question?
I'm just furrowing my brow. I agree with Senator Simmons that part of the instruction should be that the student should be responsible for checking the equipment on the vehicle. I mean, that would be part of his logical training, I would presume. And I'm just wondering if I'm driving the chair's car someplace and I get a ticket for faulty equipment, does the owner of the vehicle get the ticket, or do I? I mean, just I borrow your car to run over to pick up my laundry or something.
I can't answer that question, but I think maybe Lieutenant Stevenson can answer it when he comes up.
Well, the way the law's written right now, it can go to either one. So they do have the option.
Oh, they can already do it.
They have the option. That's true. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is say that a student in a student status who doesn't really know yet, they're still learning how to do it. Mm-hmm. Why should he be penalized for something that we failed to do?
Okay. Further questions? Did you have something that you wanted to say?
No, I did not. Thank you.
Okay. Let's call up Lieutenant Stevenson.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lieutenant James H. Stevenson of the Oregon State Police. My purpose of testifying today is to make reference to the existing statute 811.255, which is entitled Permitting Unlawful Operation of a Vehicle. And that statute, under current law, provides that an officer can cite the owner, the lessor, the lessee of a motor vehicle, or who employs or otherwise directs the driver of a motor vehicle if the person knowingly permits or requires the operation of a vehicle in violation of the rules of the road, equipment, weights and measures, operator's license violations, and vehicle licensing. And because of this existing language, the officer can either cite that individual or the driver themselves. The bill that is being introduced, House Bill 2399, actually would restrict the officer to cite only the owner, the commercial truck operator, training truck operator. Be glad to answer any questions.
And you're talking about the bill as it was amended?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dukes.
This statute you quote refers to knowingly operating a vehicle.
Yes, that's correct.
Do officers generally cite if taillights are out or whatever and it's not, the driver or owner is not aware that it's happened while you're going on? You got to rock through a headlight in the winter and you didn't realize you've only got one headlight or whatever.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, our agency's policy is to be very liberal with warnings for equipment violations. Usually, when the officer makes contact with a subject and the person has knowledge that the lights were definitely defective or that the headlight is out or whatever the circumstances are, why then we feel that that is a flagrant situation and that is when a citation should be issued. And that is how our policy guideline is. The circumstance that was described without knowing the officer that was involved in all the circumstances there, it's pretty hard for me to relate exactly to that. But that's how our policy governs our enforcement in that area.
Okay. And did I get the idea from your testimony here that you would be opposed then to 2399 because it limits...
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, yes, I would say that it's too restrictive. Plus, the main reason is we can already do it now under existing law. We have the option of either citing the driver or their owner or the person directing that person driving the vehicle.
Can you think of any cases when you, in a situation like this, when you would want to cite the driver as opposed to the owner? It makes sense to me, but then I've not worked with it. So.
I would say... just kind of hypothetically, that if I stopped the person and they knew they were out also, in addition to the trainer, I could possibly cite the driver, yes. I would still have that option. I guess I'd be considering all the totality of the circumstances.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's answer Senator Brockman's question.
My question is, Lieutenant, did you give this testimony... in the House committee?
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, no, I did not. Another officer from our agency.
Same sort of negative
yes.
type approach?
Yes, that's correct.
I have a copy of the House measure analysis, and I noticed that that five people voted for it and two people in the committee voted against it. Senator Simmons.
Madam Chair, Lieutenant Stevenson, if the 811.255 as quoted the offense of permitting the unlawful operation of a vehicle if the person knowingly permits or requires, would you have to show that he knew the light, that the person who owned the vehicle knew the lights were out?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, yes, that's the way I would interpret that language. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So in the situation quoted where apparently a malfunction had occurred during the operation, the owner of the vehicle would not have knowledge that it was out.
Yes, that's how I would see that, too.
As a matter of fact, if the driver had just gone out himself and pulled the plug, the owner still wouldn't have had knowledge of it. So this section wouldn't give you very much of a chance to cover a situation like the one was described.
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, yes, if you had to show that material fact that knowingly, I can see that as being somewhat restrictive, yeah.
Senator Brockman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the Lieutenant already said that he was not familiar with the incident that resulted in the sighting, and I came in late. I apologize. Perhaps this was brought to the attention of the committee by previous testimony, but was there an instructor present with the student that got the ticket?
Yes.
There was.
You
okay.
Want to come back
up? Well, I just wanted to make a point. The reason given that I heard anyway that the student, well, regardless of who got the ticket, was that when it left the wherever it left from the parking lot, it was everything was working, and the student should be let off the hook because he was still learning and he did not know what to look for that would have indicated to him that his taillights were not working. I would have thought that the instructor should have maybe at that time said, because he should be vigilant to that sort of thing, said, hey, by the way, do you notice anything strange? Or perhaps this would be what you would look for, and would be a perfect opportunity to teach the student what it was that he should be looking for. And I don't believe that the student should have gotten the ticket, but that just arises that perhaps would have been an opportunity that either the instructor was not vigilant or maybe there was more to the story that I don't know about.
Okay. Senator Brockman earlier asked whether if he were using my car and, for example, the tail light, I don't know what you're saying.
Well, whatever, something.
If something were defective and he was stopped, who would be ticketed?
Well, Madam Chair, more than likely it would be the person operating it. However, this existing bill, ORS 811-255, the owner could be cited under that statute also.
But, Madam Chair, only if the owner knew that it was defective when she loaned out the car.
Well, do you give me the ticket and say, give this to the owner?
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, I would make contact with the owner,
okay.
Yes, to determine that knowingly.
Because I sure wouldn't want to let her know that I got a ticket driving the car.
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, you can sit there and argue with the officer and quote the ORS that explains that he doesn't have to give you that
That's
ticket.
Right. No, no.
No, I only may give it.
Yeah,
okay. May to the owner.
Yeah. Are there any more questions for Lieutenant Stevenson? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, Lieutenant,
Simmons,
before you go, one more question. Do you know of many accidents where cars run into the back end of trucks or other cars who have no taillights?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, I know I've investigated accidents a result of that, not very many. I've investigated perhaps more where turn signals are malfunctioning or stoplights are malfunctioning, and then therefore the person does not know the person is going to turn or stop. But to actually have no taillights, pretty limited personal experience in that area.
You mean, for example, if they were changing a lane or something?
Right, and there was no signal because they're defective or no brake lights when they're trying to stop.
Well, I would assume that if the taillights are, if the plug has come out that disconnects the taillights and it also disconnects the stoplights and the turn signals, that would be a normal.
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, that's what I would conclude also, that the whole lighting system would be hooked up through that plug system.
I know I've come up behind particularly trucks on I-5 at night where they, when you get close, you finally can see a tiny little red light that shows that maybe there is something on, but it's either so covered with mud that it's not visible until you're right on top of it. And it seems to me it's a hazard.
Any more
Thank
questions?
Thank you for coming back.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The committee want to go into work session, want to think about it, want to...
Well, I'd like to think about it.
Okay, we'll think about it. We will then close the hearing on Senate Bill 23, House Bill 2399, and open a hearing on House Bill 2775. And there's one person signed up for this, and that's Mr. Seeley for the Motor Vehicles Division.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Bill Seeley with the Motor Vehicles Division.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you. House Bill 2775, as amended by the House on March 17th, will require that trip permits and temporary registration permits be displayed in the rear window of a vehicle. It also states that the color and size of the print on the permits will be such that the permits will be readable. The bill also makes provisions for vehicles that have no rear window or by the construction of the vehicle make it impossible to do that and direct the division to adopt rules to cover those instances, which we will do. To make the permit easily readable may require either a larger permit size or an increase in the control number that's on the permit and an increase in the size of the expiration that's on the permit so that it's easily identifiable as a control number and as of the date of the validity of the expiration of the permit. Our experience has been that an increase in the control number can be quite costly, and we would, should this pass, we would work to meet the intent of the bill and try to keep the costs down at the same time by not getting overly large on the control numbers or other areas on the permit that may cause the cost of the forms to go out of sight for us. That concludes my testimony, Madam Chair.
Question? Senator Duke?
Not really of the witness, but more of Senator Simmons to see if my memory is correct. I seem to recall a conversation early in the session about, and I thought it was the same permit that Senator Simmons was questioning state patrolmen about. They were faded and they were difficult to read. And the response from the state patrol was that there wasn't much you could do about it, that they were going to fade from the sun and they were going to be difficult to read. Am I anywhere near correct, Senator?
Yes, you are. And I had noticed in writing with state police on the two occasions we had to look at a temporary permit. In both cases, the printing was so faded that it was illegible. And I have talked with Motor Vehicles since, and they have said that they're now using a different kind of carbon or a different kind of ink or something that might make it more legible, and I personally am conducting an experiment right now because my son just bought a new car and has a temporary permit, and I'm going to watch the lettering on that to see if it remains legible for the 60 days the permit is issued for.
Is he going to park it in the sun?
Yeah, frequently.
What's that?
Madam Chair,
Senator,
I guess my question then would be, if we do this, is it really going to work? I mean, are the temporary registration forms going to be legible? Or is this just a nice idea that would work if we had control over all of those other factors like sun?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, I spoke with Senator Simmons last year on this particular issue, and there would be quite a difference in the design of the forms. At least that would be our expectation. Should this bill pass. Right now, the biggest problem with the permits, as Senator Simmons pointed out, is that I guess the two key pieces of information on it would be the expiration date and a vehicle identifier, so that for enforcement purposes, an enforcement officer could determine whether it was attached to the correct vehicle and could determine whether it's still valid, whether it had expired yet or not. We move into with House Bill 2775 with some intent to make the permit more visible, we would attempt to find a way to make the permit a little bit larger and make sure that the important items on it that would identify both the vehicle and the validity of the permit would be readable from more distance than they are now. And that would probably require going back to having the original permit, and in other words, the top copy when it's completed, be the one that's attached to the vehicle. One of the reasons we're having some difficulty with the permits now is with the last session, a bill passed that resulted in 803-640, which prohibited the name and address from showing on the permit, so it's not visible from outside of the vehicle, which was fine, but we switched our procedures, and what was an original copy of the permit filled out in ink that used to be attached to the windshield of the vehicle now became the bottom copy. Since we were still required to collect the name and address but not have it show on the permit, the method we chose to do that was a multi-part form where only certain portion of pieces of information would go through. And so it, 2 years ago, it became a new experience for us not to have the original on the vehicle.
Does this solve some major problem you have or somebody has?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, not a major problem that we have, and listening to testimony from Representative Minnis on the House side, my understanding is that the idea is that if it's in the rear window of the vehicle, it's easier to see, especially if your vehicle coming up on another vehicle. And another item that he testified to was that if the permit were more readable at a greater distance, it would be it would serve more of a purpose, as such as a registration plate does. It identifies the vehicle, and if someone does something to you and then runs off, it might be easier to take down a number for a vehicle that's operating on a permit and be able to do something about it at a later date. That's my understanding from his testimony.
Okay, thank you. I'm sure, was there a fiscal impact that came with this?
No.
Just mentioned that they would try to minimize the cost, but there might be.
They have to order new forms of some sort every so often anyhow. I don't know if they, everybody in them probably.
Madam Chair, we
change the
we try to match volume and usage and to get the best cost, and of course we try to match running out of those kinds of forms with about September every other year.
Okay. Senator Kentai and Senator Simmons.
What's it matter whether it's on the left side or the right side?
You might want to, I don't know, it came from Representative Minnis, and you might want to ask the police that. Lieutenant Stevenson, would you like to come?
Madam Chair, while he's coming up, might ask Mr. Seeley, California uses the kind of permit you're talking about, do they not, with a fairly large number and on the rear of the window?
Madam Chair, Senator Simmons, I'm not personally familiar with California's. We looked at Washington's.
You looked at Washington?
And is theirs also...
this is the actual size of Washington's permit.
And what's the actual size of ours?
He just happens to have one with him.
Yeah, that's a little different, isn't it?
This is one of the permits we use. This is the temporary registration permit. It's issued in lieu of registration plates until the registration plates can be issued, as in the case of a dealer.
That faint number on top is the number that's visible in the window?
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Ah. Okay.
These are one-inch high letters. Washington uses two-inch high letters. Okay. And the reason we made the point about trying to balance the cost is that this can be going double reduces the number of vendors that can accomplish something like this, and the cost goes up considerably. We have that.